Bernabella, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here with us. You're playing in Barcelona on the 4th of October at the Centre Artesà Tradicionarios, which is an absolutely gorgeous venue. It's like this little theatre capacity, about 300, 400, but like it looks like a sort of big theatre made miniature. It's really, really, really nice. When was the last time you played Barcelona?
I think it was probably, I played with Ben Watt for about 5 years. So Ben was in Everything But the Girl, and I did Ben's, when Ben was touring as a solo artist. That may have been about, I don't know, 2015 or something, and we did Primavera. So I think that's, I remember being in Barcelona for the Primavera Festival, yeah.
I didn't remember you played Primavera Sound with Ben Watt.
But this year you're touring because you released Good Grief, which is your first solo album in 25 years. How did it feel to get back to solo work after all these years?
Well, the most common question I'm getting at all the time at the moment is how to connect decades that have gone past of doing something. But for me, I don't really see it that way. I mean, I connect what I did this morning with what I did yesterday and what I'll do tomorrow. And so I don't really see any massive leap, but I understand it's like that for other people. But, you know, I mean, I'm really enjoying performing on my own. And it's something I've been doing sort of privately for about 5 years anyway. It's culminated in the record coming out. But, I really enjoyed the freedom. You know, there's a real freedom of performing on your own. I can choose my moment. You know, I really believe that an audience is part of a performance, not just the performer. And so you create an atmosphere, and particularly when you have quite small, intimate venues, you know, you create an environment together. You know, everyone might have had a bad day or something, you know, or everyone's had a good day. You never know who you're going to meet. You arrive in a town and you don't know what people are going to be like. And it all combines to make something quite unique. And when you're performing on your own, it's the joy of it for me is that I can improvise an awful lot. I don't know really what I'm going to play, and quite often change things on the spot. So I really enjoy that freedom. It's, you know, it's what being a musician is about.
And you've, apart from your own songs that you've written and music for so many other artists. Do you ever include some of the songs that you've written for other artists in your own shows?
Yeah, I do whatever I like, really. I mean, I do whatever I feel I can. It's the right thing to do. I feel what is appropriate. I just think what I can make a good performance out of. Yeah, so I perform, lots of songs I've written with other people. And, you know, I the task is really they're records that I made. And you have to sort of remove yourself from the idea that you're in a studio and it's a recording. A recording is a very bespoke thing that's made in a room like this. In fact, most of my records are made in here. And the kind of relationship between you and a pair of speakers, and 95% of that time is just me on my own. You know, when you go and perform with in front of people, it's about delivering a performance on the spot. So again, it's a great freedom to reinterpret music and reinterpret songs. But I never try and just recreate records, because I just don't believe that's the right way of going about it.
Because I read that the gestation of the new album began with you trying to remember all of the songs you'd ever written from memory. Were you able to remember them all?
No, I mean, that was the point, really. So I just thought if they're any good, I'll remember them, you know, and the rubbish ones I just won't remember, you know, and there's lots of rubbish in there. I mean, what happened was I just decided to go and take myself out of this room, actually, and go to a small sort of dingy rehearsal room. And I started doing this once a week on my own. And the idea was to try and all this music that I've made with myself or other people, I just wanted to find out the thread between it. I thought it'd be interesting to find out what brings it all together, you know, and that's kind of, you know, I'm in there somewhere, But I didn't really know what that was, because they're all lots of different sounding records, different voices, different arrangements over different periods of time. So I just started going into a rehearsal room on my own, and I thought, well, I'll just go and sing some songs from memory. I don't like listening to my own music either. So what I didn't want to do is sit down and start listening to records, getting them all out, you know, and trying to make lists of things I liked, because I just thought, well, I'll never choose any then, you know, if I do that. So I just thought it'd be interesting to try and see what would happen if I tried to sing songs without really remembering the arrangements or the lyrics or anything. And I thought, if I forget some lyrics, I'll make some up. And so that's what I did. But yeah, I just started putting things together. And that's the songs I ended up with performing.
I thought, it sounds to me like your voice has kind of really matured over the years. And I thought the vocals on the new album, they reminded me a bit of Bowie. Does that make sense?
No.
Oh, fair enough.
I mean, whenever people say to it, it's a natural thing that we all slip into. I like, there's two sides to this comment. Part A is, I like this. Part B is, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah.
And for a musician, the part A is the like, that's that you can just leave it there. I don't need to know anymore. You know?
Fair enough.
But here's the list, because I write them down. I do make a list of them. So the people who I sound like are the following: David Bowie, Tom Waits, Leonard Cohen, Nick Cave. Who else? I don't know. The bloke out of Take That. I don't
not
know.
Gary Barlow, is it?
It goes on and on. You can list it. And if you put all of those people together, there's no connection between any of them. But apart from their mail, you know, but that isn't very helpful. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I never, ever do anything apart from try and, express... who I am, you know. There's just all the mistakes and all the terrible characteristic flaws of being a human being. But I can't think of anything worse than trying to sound like somebody else. Yeah.
But if you take a song like Woman I Know from your first debut album to Cumber Sands, you know, there is an evolution. You know, a woman I know, you've got a breezy young man's voice, obviously, you know, many years have passed since. And Cumber Sands, we hear there's a rasp, there's a, you know, it's like a more weathered voice. Did you work on that? Did you, you know, to sort of find your voice now? Or is it just naturally like, open the mic and this is what's coming out?
I mean, I smoked cigars for 25 years.
There you go.
So, first of all, with the first, when I did People Move On, I didn't have any, I didn't really have the chance to find a voice, you know, to be really, feel really natural and really comfortable. Every time I recorded, I was in front of people. I was in a studio. It was, people wanted to hear it instantly, anything I did. It's not a very natural process. It's like saying, I'd like to run a marathon. I've never run before, and I'm going to run the marathon this weekend. You know, it's just sort of it was a big task, you know? And so the way I compensated for it was, I feel, looking back now, that I affected my voice. I sort of assumed sort of a kind of a tone and a delivery to get through the process, because I just didn't have the time to just do what I've done this time around and spend months listening to myself and being comfortable with who I am. So I look back now and I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I mean, I like the songs, but I don't like the way I sound. But I feel like, so what I did in this case is I thought, well, now nobody cares at all what I sound like. It's 25 years later. So this is why I went into the rehearsal room, and I thought, I did this for about a year. And I just went for, to have fun, really, to enjoy myself. And after, you know, a few occasions, I'd record myself on my phone and listen back and think, yeah, I'm kind of comfortable with this now. I enjoy this much more. And I thought, if I can do that after a few months, if I'm still enjoying it and it still feels natural, then I'll start writing songs. And that's what happened. And songs started evolving from that.
Because a few years ago, you re-recorded the vocals for People Move On, right? There was a new version that came out on Demon. I think it was Demon. That seemed like a very interesting thing to do. Was it just because you were dissatisfied with your voice on the original record?
Yeah, I mean, I get this all the time. People want you to remaster, do an anniversary record. You know, this is like a constant thing. You know, it's your fourth anniversary, your 17 and a half year anniversary. Do a box set, you know? It's just like a constant drip of trying to resell stuff to everybody, which I'm not really a great fan of, to be honest, but... But Demon kept asking me to do this, and I just said, well, look, I don't want to re-release that record because I don't like it very much, you know. And so they asked me at a time when it coincided with me doing this this process of rehearsing, and I just went to someone and said, you know what, I've got an idea, you know, I'll do it if you let me do this, because then I'd really be happy with re-recording the songs and having a version of it that sits in a place that that I'm really comfortable with. So and they said yeah. So that's how that came about. You know, we changed the sleeve because the sleeve was something I never liked either, and we used the original the photograph, which I wanted to be the sleeve of the record, and was sort of vetoed at the time. So the result of it is something I really like.
Going back to Canber Sands, which is the first song on the new album, is that somewhere that has a personal history with you? Is it somewhere you used to visit as a child?
No, not at all as a child. I mean, it took about the last 5-10 years. I go there a lot. It's on the south coast of England, and very beautiful place, very barren, quite deep, sandy beach. I know you're used to this in Spain, but in England it's a different story. And just lovely, a really place you can go, you know, walk your dog and that kind of stuff, and you'll see almost nobody. The reason that behind the song is it's like a 2-hour distance from London. I'm a Londoner. I've never left here. I got into a process of over, you know, every sort of month or so, finding somewhere to go in the south coast of England, often in Norfolk or Suffolk as well, in East Anglia. I don't really know why, you know. And whenever I'd go there, I'd be really happy if there was no one else there for a start. So I'm not a very good holiday person in that way, because I sort of dread seeing other people. And so I was really happy just going there and wandering, and there's something beautiful about seeing the coastline when you see you look out to sea. You know, it's kind of this feeling of endless opportunity, of what can be in your life, and it all gets very poetic in the back of your brain, you know. Especially as a city person, you know, in the city, I'm all I hear all day is police helicopters and, you know, sirens and motorbikes and stuff, you know, and noise. And so when I go to the seaside in any area, you know, you dream. And you just immediately think, wow, well, I'll move here, you know, obviously. Yeah. I'll get a boat, you know, and that kind of stuff, you know. And then of course you just drive back up the motorway and you say, what was I talking about? What was I even thinking? Of course I'm not going to go and live by the sea, you know. So that's really and Canber Sands is just one of those places that sounded good in the song, and I always wanted to write about. It's also on that sort of section of the border of Kent and Sussex, down there, which is Brexit City, really. And so that really fascinates me. It's on the way down to you know, the coastline, where the controversy about the migrant boats, etc., is always going on. And so it's this combination of these beautiful coastlines and this sort of unacceptance to you know, of anybody else being able to experience this, you know. But yeah.
The beauty of the world versus the flaw of humanity, no? All in one.
Exactly. So I read, I became really interested. There's a book called The Rings of Saturn by W.G. Siebold. And it's a really, really amazing book, which had a big impact on me at this time. And it's about a man who just walks along the Suffolk coast, and if you can do this kind of trail along the Suffolk coast where he is juxtaposing the beautiful barren coastland with the places and zones which have been used for sort of military operations and places of destruction, basically, and what that mankind's possibility to use connect places of beauty with actually destroying ourselves. it's actually a more beautiful book than you can imagine. It's really incredibly beautiful, but it's all about walking. So I just got really interested in walking and it's inspired most of this record.
I don't necessarily want to get into Norfolk beach spotting, but that you mentioned you'd been up to beaches in Norfolk, and the song Campersands, I have been to Campersands once, but the song really reminded me of Holcombe Beach up in Norfolk. Have you ever been there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's amazing. Many, many times. Yeah, it's very similar, actually. I mean, Holcombe is much more posh than Campersands. But yeah, very similar. You know, on those beaches, you can walk out. It takes you like 20 minutes just to get to the tide, you know. Yeah, beautiful. I love that part of England, all around there.
And tell me, you know, it's been 25 years since your last record, you know. Good Grief, do the 9 songs in Good Grief belong to a period in time when you were composing and writing them, or do some of them date back a long time?
I mean, they're probably around the last 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, some of them, you know, some of them from earlier, and some of them were nearer the time of recording. But everything came out pretty new to this record, yeah.
I love the title because it makes you think, you know, obviously, good grief. It's an expression, a popular expression, like, oh my goodness. But it's also like, hey, what if there is grief that is good? Is that what you're trying to convey?
It's exactly that. Yeah, I went through a period of grief, not during making the record, actually, but just afterwards when I was waiting, just at the time I'd finished it. And so it was a natural... it's exactly what you say. It's something that I've experienced grief in a bad way, in a very negative way. And when I experienced it on this occasion, it was something that obviously was very sad. But I tried to learn how to experience it in a positive way and reflect on it. And it sort of coincided with when deep emotions coincide with making music. You know, that's... There's no coincidence, you know, there's no getting away from it. And I also liked the English expression of good grief. Yeah, well, how we I like cliches. I'm a fan of cliches, that with things and that we don't think about too often, and we use these strange expressions. So yeah, it is a sort of strange expression we use in everyday life. And actually, during this time, I kept using this expression, like, oh, good grief, you know. And I was like, you know, it was such a strange connection.
So on the new album, you play violin on Preaching to the Choir. I didn't know you played violin. Is that something new or something from your youth? Or
no, I mean, I played the violin when I was quite small, and I gave it, yeah, through my sort of primary school years till I was about 14. And I don't play it very well. During the lockdown, you know, when everyone went mad during lockdown and sort of, you know, middle-aged men started buying guitars, well, I bought a violin, you know. Because I just thought, this is my moment, I'm going to get back to this. And I can't play it, really, but I like it. Part of me wants desperately to play it, to learn again, and part of me likes the fact that it just sits behind me with a load of rubbish here that I've got everywhere here. And I just make noises with it, you know, and I take the John Cale approach of making scratchy noises and seeing what happens, and, you know, as long as I can make some, you know, some simple notes, it's fine.
Well, we can see some of your impressive guitar collection behind you there in your personal studio. Are you of those the type of collector that also has guitars that you don't play, that you just you play maybe for yourself, but you've never used in your professional career as a live performer? Do you have them sort of just sitting there? It's like, oh, no, this can't leave the house.
It's not that they can't leave the house. It's just that I don't choose to use them. You know, I'll use any of the guitars. The guitar that I use most of all is here. Oh, you can't see that.
There it is. There it is.
Classic.
That's so iconic. You and
so this is a 1961 Gibson 355. It is
355.
And I use this on 95% of everything I do, really, and have done for since the day I bought it. So it's you know, it's gradually become older and worth more money, which is worrying because I can't afford to buy another one anymore. So because they've just gone through the roof. So but it's just what I use. You know, it's just what I use daily. It's literally sitting here. It's always sitting here next to me, and that's all I, you know, use most of the time. So
Is that the same guitar that we've seen in the video when you were playing with Suede, or in live performances when you were in Suede?
Definitely had it during that time, yeah. Partly, part of during that time, yeah. Bought it in 93.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I'm getting goosebumps. Oh, my God.
And that's also the name of your label, 355.
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So going back to the new album, Jesse Buckley has got a writing credit on The Wind.
Who you recorded with, you know, you got a Mercury Music Prize. Well, she got the Mercury Music Prize nomination.
Yes,
For the album she made with you.
How did that happen? How did the writing credit happen?
Because it was the first song. So when I met Jesse, I'd already started writing songs for this record, for Good Grief. And I met Jesse and it was quite a strange one. It was, I thought nothing would happen. And I met her and I wrote a tune and sent it to her. And she said, she started sending me sort of random text messages that were quite long and quite abstract words. And I collated all these words and I put some of them into a song and I made up the rest. And I sent it to her and she said, "Oh, that's really lovely. Should we write a song now?" And I was like, "Oh." Well, that is the song, Jesse. But anyway, yeah, we can write songs anyway. So I just sort of left that. I just thought, yeah, whatever, I'll leave that. And then so we got together and we started writing songs in my kitchen, and we did it like every Tuesday or something for a few weeks until a record started to emerge. You know, we wrote all these songs, and then that became the record that was there. When I went back to my record, I just thought, well, there was that song that was quite good, and you know, so the lines of the first verse are pretty much Jesse's, that's it. I don't know if she's even heard it, to be honest.
I'm sure she has.
But how do people find you? Because you seem like you're quite shy and you keep to yourself, but you've worked with so many artists and had fun and great success, you know, helping them. Obviously, David McCallman, Duffy with Rock Ferry, Jesse Buckley.
There's a very, very long list.
Very long list. Catherine Ann Davies. How do people find? I mean, do you have an agent who takes care of the, you know, offering you as a producer and songwriter for hire, or is it all sort of spontaneous encounters? And it's like, oh, we get on well. We might as well, you know, write something.
No, I get lucky. You know, I mean, my whole career has been lucky. You know, I was never supposed to be doing this. I was a musician when I was four, but I was never meant to be doing this to make a living, you know. So it's always a mystery to me, and it still is. I don't know, you know, those periods, there's always, with Jesse, for example, Jesse just got in touch through a sort of, a friend who got in touch with somebody who knew me, and it was like that. She just wanted to write some songs. You know, Jessie's just basically incredibly talented. Yes. She can just do anything. Yes. You know, and if she became a sculptor next year, I would not be surprised at all. You know, she's like that. And it was COVID time, and she was supposed to be in a film or something, and that was cancelled. And so she wanted to do some writing. She just wanted to write some songs. And so it's quite an unusual process. She didn't want to make a record or play them live or anything like that. She just wanted to write with somebody and see what happened, you know. And so when we wrote songs and I said, well, you know, let's make the record now. And she said, no, I don't want to do that. And I said, well, you know, that's what we normally do when we write songs in my business. You know, you write the song and then you record it so people can hear it. And, you know, that's the deal. You know, that's what we do. And she just didn't really want to do it. So I basically went off and recorded it all myself. And then presented her pieces of music based on the song, that these little sketches that we'd written, and you could just hear her voice in the background in my kitchen. And once I played that to her, she was just, I think she was quite interested with the process, you know, and so I got her to sing on them, you know. So it's quite a difficult process, you know, but it was amazing, you know, amazing process, you know.
I find that really interesting, because it's like it was obviously the right way to get to do it. But can you imagine if you'd done all that and you had these songs, these recordings you were really happy with?
Hours
of work.
She was
just like, no, sorry.
I mean, that's pretty much where it was left, you know. I mean, to be fair to her, she was completely 100% artistically true to her word. You know, there was no career plan. She just wanted to write some songs. And once she'd done that, she really enjoyed the process and then she was off. And so it was quite difficult to get that to her, that people would like to hear them. And so we did do some shows, but after that we wanted to do many, many more shows, and she just didn't want to do it. You know, she just doesn't want to be a touring musician, which is fine. You know, most people in the world don't want to be touring musicians either. So the upside is I get to sing the songs now in my live set and tell the story, you know, and it's just a nice thing. You know, I mean, Jessie's 100% an artist. And it's really, really a relief when you meet somebody who's like that. But it's also frustrating because she played all my best cards, put it that way. You know, all the cards I play on somebody else, it's the only time somebody's played them on me. I was gutted by that. I was just like, I can't believe you. You know,
what do you mean exactly? She played the cards.
Like, well, because she was prepared to just do something for the sake of it, and walk off and leave it. When, you know, we could have toured and, you know, played to lots of people and come to Barcelona and be talking to you right now, both of us, and all that kind of stuff, and on to our next album, and you know, that's the kind of typical career move, which was very much there for us to take. And she just wasn't interested. You know, she said, "No, I've created something. Now I'm going to go and create something else." So, and it's very much the way I'd look at creating. And I always try and encourage people. People always say to me, you know, if I'm working with somebody, they might, you know, ask what's the most, you know, the best shot of getting on the radio or something. And I've said, I don't know. I don't listen to the radio. Don't ask me. You know, make something because it's beautiful and because it moves you. You know, and it means something to you. If it means something to you, then somebody else it will mean something to as well, maybe. But, you know, do it to yourself first, you know. And so, you know, that's what I always say to people. She just did it to me. So I was gutted, really. But, you know, God bless her. She's amazing, you know. And I love her. I love the songs. I love our songs that we wrote. And, you know, and it was very important, actually, that record, in the process of jumping onto my record. Because it was a very unusual way of writing songs. We'd start with getting books and films and stuff like that, and just grabbing words and words and words that we, or films we hadn't seen, books we'd never read, and we'd put things together in a really collage way, and say, what is this? What does this mean? You know, and we'd talk about it an awful lot. We'd talk for hours, you know, before we wrote the song, and so it's a really, really lovely time.
Speaking of collaboration, sorry, Ben, I was having dinner many moons ago in Madrid with Kate Jackson from the Long Blondes, and she was like, I was like, what's happening? Because Long Blondes was going to go on hiatus, and was like, what's happening? What are you going to be doing? She says, I'm writing music with Bernard Butler. And I was like, what? And that ended up being British Road Movies. So what can you share with us? What do you fondly remember from that partnership?
I really like Kate, and it was really nice. It was quite difficult for her, because I think at the time, you know, there wasn't much interest in her personally, which is such a shame. You know, things go in cycles, you know. It's for the sort of very vacuous music industry goes in cycles, where people who are very talented, you just, after 5 years later, nobody's interested at all, even though you can be doing something really great. And I thought Kate was in that space where it's very difficult, and we could both feel that we were doing something really, really not really great. We loved, and she has a great voice. She's a great writer, but it was very difficult. We'd just make this music, and so, you know, a bit like the anti-Jessie thing. Like literally, nobody was interested, and nobody wanted to hear it. Nobody cared at all, you know. And it's really funny, actually, because one of those songs came up for me. couple of weeks ago, and I heard it totally by accident, and I thought, wow, what's this? And I was like, oh, I did this. Sometimes you hear songs and you remember, you're like, why do I recognize this? And it's like, it came up on a playlist, you know, on your streamer. And I was like, I think this is me, you know, with Kate. And it was really great. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed listening to it again. Yeah. So, she's very good. You know, she's got a lot of integrity, and she wasn't going to hang around and try and sell herself. So if nobody knows that record, but there's nobody does know that record. So please go and find it, because it's really great.
I'm glad I brought it up. You know, it's let's give it a second chance. It's worth it.
I was wondering, on a sort of two-part question, do you ever get nervous with working people, and do people ever get nervous with working with you?
I never get nervous. No, with working with people. No, it's my job. So it's, you know, I get nervous in the sense I get excited, and I try and prep things. You know, I don't want to be an arsehole and too much, and I don't want to make a fool of myself. You know, I always want to, if I'm about to meet somebody for the first time, you just want to have a bit of an idea. But most of all, you just want to, the number one thing is you have to sort of get to know somebody very quickly. You know, with writing, I always just find that the first thing is you just make tea, you know, and if you can get tea down somebody and start talking about their day, saying, you know, what you've been doing, how did you get here, you know, someone went under the train, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, it's raining, my boyfriend left me, all that kind of stuff. Then you just basically you just start saying, well, there's songs everywhere, you know. And so you get to know you get to know what you need to know about somebody, put it that way. You know, I don't really want to know anything, you know, that you can't get a picture of everybody's life, you know, but you can get what you need to, you know, little capsules, you know, which can become songs, you know, and I think that's really important.
Sorry to harp on about my perception of your shyness, but I mean,
I don't think I'm that shy, really. I mean, you know, I like my own company. It's, you know, I'm like that. I've got plenty of friends, you know, and I don't really hang out with musicians. You know, people I know socially just don't tend to be musicians. They tend to be just, you know, whatever, and they don't talk to me about music. The friends that I'm around, you know, so, you know, and I'm totally fine with I do sit in this room 8 hours a day, pretty much on my own most of the time. Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. You seem like you're very comfortable with being alone, and there's incredible things going on in your head that you transmit through your instruments and elsewhere. But I'm just I was so fascinated with the way you performed playing guitar when we first got to see you in Suede videos and Suede live performances. And it's like, this is so incredible. This is such an incredible performer to look at. Where did that come from? The swaying, the moving, and being able to play so sharply, so young. I mean, was that a way of dealing with maybe stage fright? And it's like, I'm going to move about a lot so that I don't see all these faces looking at me, or was it something you was always doing since you were four in your bedroom? I need to
with
know.
A tennis racket. Mm-hmm.
With a tennis racket, like we all do.
No, I always had a guitar, so I didn't have a tennis racket. But where did that come from? I don't know. Being young, nervous energy. I'd never say I was nervous as such, but I was probably overdoing it all the time. Just I always felt I was never doing enough. So that was my feeling. You know, my Catholic guilt I'm riddled with Catholic guilt, which always makes me feel that I've never done enough and it's not good enough. And that drives me. And so it definitely at that time, visually, I mean, I can't watch anything like that now. It's excruciating, you know, but, it was definitely a feeling that, I needed to be better, you know, and my overriding feeling of that time was that I always wanted to learn more, learn faster. And I watched other people around me. I watched musicians I liked, and I just thought, I'd better get my shit together, you know, quite quickly. You know, I've got to be better than this, you know? So I used to always think that. And that's probably where that comes from. I mean, and that's manifest in a sort of this bizarre visual, creature, which isn't really me.
You've been really generous with you with your time. I just wanted to ask one more thing because it really interests me. Like, after all these years in music and records that have sold millions and records that that haven't sold millions, what is success for you?
Good question.
Oh, I mean, you know, being alive, sitting here today, I'm very privileged that people are interested in my music, and have been for years and ask, you know, questions. And that's really nice. It's really kind when you hear people who've got knowledge of what you do. It sort of blows you away, really. I don't take it for granted. I mean, I sit in this room and I've got music around me, and I've got, musical projects to work on. The minute I stop here, I'll be working on one. I finished one this morning. I'm off to Spain next week. You know, like, it's great. You know, I'm going to go to Spain and they're going to get the train every day to a different city. I've never been to some of the cities, never been to Zaragoza before. And you turn up and you just sing some songs and people listen to you. It's, that's success. You know, I mean, it's success every time I finish a record, if I feel good about it. Hmm. You know, all of those kind of things.
Zaragoza, A Coruña, Madrid, Barcelona. I think that's all of
what
them.
What a great run. Coruña, you're going to eat so well.
I've never been.
Oh, really? Oh, Coruña's incredible.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah, I've never been to it. So I think it's just really lovely that I get to be asked to go to places. And most of all, that I've got another record to do, you know, as soon as I can, you know, that I'm always making something. You know, the worst thing in the world is if you just say, oh, well, I did that. So now what would you do now? You know, I always think this is my last record. It always is. Everything I do, I always think it's the last time, you know. So I always just try and engineer things to happen to make sure that I'm just making music, you know, in some way.
Well, look, it's been really great to speak to you. Barcelona, the 4th of October at Centre Artesat de Rutianarias, which is up in Gràcia. And as I say, it is one of the nicest venues in Barcelona. It's absolutely gorgeous.
That's lovely. That's great.
You'll enjoy it. I think. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much for talking to me.
Thank you. Thank you. See you soon. And okay, that would be the end. Thank you so much.
Thank you
Bernard.
So much. It was absolutely. Absolute.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks so much. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Great questions.
It's a joy. It's a joy to be able to.
And I got to see Johan's sort of impression. That was quite. I've never seen him do that before.
Well, come on. I was doing the Bernard Butler's way. You know, with the neck of the guitar.
You don't have
up
the
here.
Fringe, but yeah.
I didn't have the fringe. I didn't. I always hated the fact that I didn't have that wonderful mane of hair. You know, and Johnny Greenwood. It was just like, oh, the hair. You know, while you're playing guitar.
Yeah,
anyway,
well, that's.
And you still have great hair. Oh, lucky man.
Oh. Oh, this is a bad hair day. No. See, when I'm sitting in my work mode, I'm just wearing the cap all day long. That's actually what I'm like all day long, wearing the cap, because it helps me focus. I'm just the same as you. We're all the same.
No. I wear a cap because it's going baldy here. So it's like, I'm too conscious. But yeah. Anyway, we have to be off.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
See you soon.
Peace again.
Bye,
see
Bernard.
Ya. Bye.
Bye.